This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, my name is Majida Hashim and you are listening to Enterprise. On the 31st of March, 1971, history teacher Seth Siegel and his two friends, Jerry Baldwin and Gordon Boker, opened the very first Starbucks store in Seattle, Washington. Back then, Starbucks sold only whole roasted coffee beans and did not brew coffee to sell yet. Fast forward 46 years later, Starbucks has now over 27,000 stores in 70 countries. And while Seth Siegel is no longer part of the Starbucks team per se, he speaks fondly, as you shall hear, about the company. Yes, folks, joining me over the phone all the way from San Francisco, USA this morning is one of the founding members of the coffee empire known as Starbucks, Seth Siegel. So I know I'm not going to be the first one to ask you this question. I know you've been asked this so many times. But for the benefit of our listeners who are really huge, huge fans of Starbucks, could you tell us in your own words the story of Starbucks?
The story of Starbucks has three basic chapters. Mm-hmm. The first one, which is roughly the 1970s, that's when three friends who are the co-founders of the company, which includes me, mm-hmm. Somehow we did most things right, and with a little luck on top of doing things right, we were able to put together a company that was very successful in Seattle, Washington. Mm-hmm. Okay. In the second chapter of the story, which begins in the mid-1980s, the company was acquired and refreshed by a team led by Howard Schultz. Mm-hmm. Mr. Schultz is still the leader of the company now. The focus of Starbucks was changed to feature coffee bars. And during the 80s and early 90s, it grew to become a national company in the United States. Mm-hmm. And it became the place in America to yum cha. then the third chapter began in the late 90s, and this is the one that eventually affected Malaysia. Starbucks, over a period of time, it took about 20 years, grew to become an international phenomenon. Mm-hmm. It's everywhere.
Yeah.
There are beautiful Starbucks stores in Malaysia, mm-hmm. but they're also in Mexico, in Morocco, in Japan, and there are now around the world 27,000 Starbucks coffee bars.
Wow.
So I think there's going to be a fourth chapter mm-hmm. to this story, but it's just beginning, and it's very hard to project what's going to happen. Uh-huh. But I think that an indication of what might happen is that Starbucks has introduced a new brand, what's called a sub-brand, mm-hmm. which is Starbucks Reserve. And it's rolling out all over the world. The old brand, the green logo with circle with the mermaid, is still going. Uh-huh. And they are also, to promote the new brand, Starbucks is building what are called Starbucks Reserve Roasteries. The first one is here in Seattle. It's about a half a mile from where I live.
Okay.
And then the next one's in China, and then Europe, and who knows where else.
Wow.
These are absolutely fabulous coffee emporiums. They're sort of like a coffee Disneylands almost.
Yeah.
And they're all over the internet. It's called Starbucks Reserve Roastery. So I think that's part of the future. So.
Yeah, you're getting a lot of the Malaysian fans really excited about this because we love our coffee. Back to the early days, what lessons can startups learn from Starbucks about co-founder and co-founder relationship?
Yeah, new ventures do not have to have more than one founder.
Mm-hmm.
one founder is enough. There were three of us.
Yeah.
And, you know, that worked really well for us, and it also worked really well for the company. You know, you get three good minds instead of just one, mm-hmm. right from the first. But, you know, the world is full of stories about partnerships that did not work well. Mm. I just happened to experience that myself. So, you know, having had a good experience, I think that co-founder relationships are quite possible. There has to be an appreciation for each other, to listen and to consider things. You know, people who are very set in their ways don't do well in partnerships.
Mm. What made it work for the three of you in the beginning? What was that winning thing that
I think the most important thing was that we each had different skills. Mm-hmm. There wasn't much overlap in our abilities, and in addition to that, there was the fact that we were willing to respect each other.
Mm. What lessons can startups learn from Starbucks about having great value proposition?
Oh, yeah, that's a wonderful subject as it relates to Starbucks. I'm glad you asked that question. So first, you know, there can be a good value proposition at almost any price point. It just depends on what the situation is. Mm-hmm. So, you know, a hawker stall in Kuala Lumpur can be a terrific value at a low price. Starbucks, I think, is perceived all over the world as a good value at a high price. Mm-hmm. At the stores in Malaysia, you know, it appears that customers really like the value they're getting because, you know, no one would ever say, you know, bola kurang. and that's because of the many ways that Starbucks adds value to each purchase. Mm. So, you know, you come into the store and the store is beautiful.
Yeah.
You may have a Starbucks a card on your phone. The baristas are very interested in you. Mm-hmm. And I think that's pretty much a genuine interest, too. They want to know about you and coffee. You know, Starbucks sends you a free drink on your birthday if you're on if you have a Starbucks card. Mm-hmm. And in a lot of countries, the company also does corporate social responsibility programs where they do things for the local communities. Mm. And they've done some huge ones in many countries, and also some small ones. It can be as small as giving awards to teachers or. In China, they did a program to which they gave $1 million a year for 3 years. And it was a program that trained teachers of young children.
Wow.
Starbucks didn't operate the program. They didn't think it up. They just provided some additional support. And then they told everybody in China that they were doing that. I mean, that's corporate social responsibility is a tremendous value addition to buying the cup of coffee.
Can you share with us what are some of your highest and lowest points when you were running Starbucks and what kept you going through it all?
Hmm, good question. I think with most startups, the kinds of high points that you experience are the same for many companies. You know, there's the opening, it's very exciting. There's the first month when you break even and stop losing money. That's very and then, you know, there's the first year with profit.
Yeah.
So you can have a party. And it's nice if you win an award and it feels very exciting to get a good review for your business of any kind. Mm-hmm. And also I think it's very rewarding to read positive social buzz about the company in social media. Mm-hmm. And those are wonderful high points if you happen to have started a company. Now, the lows, nobody talks about the lows.
Yeah.
Right? It's a little harder to find out about that. But not only have I started companies myself, more than one, uh-huh. But I have been a coach. I've been a coach to many entrepreneurs, 25 to 30 years old. And I can tell you that for the founders of Starbucks, I think the lowest point might have been when we ran out of money in our second year. We grew faster than we had planned to. So we used up all of our capital. We had zero in the bank. We were profitable, but we had no cash. And that caused us huge problems and a lot of sleepless nights.
Wow.
It was terrible.
Yeah.
But we got out of it.
Yeah. What kept you going through it all?
Well, you know, at that time, it's a good question. At that time, we were in business. We had employees that we wanted to continue paying, and we had customers who really loved our coffee.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we just didn't, you know, we wouldn't have felt good about giving up. You have a responsibility.
This morning, I'm speaking to Seth Siegel, co-founder of Starbucks. We're going to take a short break right now, but when we come back, we'll be speaking to him about lessons from Starbucks about customer service, branding, and market presence. Stay tuned right here on BFM 89.9.
Bodacious, fabulous minds. BFM 89.9, the business station.
And we are back on Enterprise. My name is Majida Hashim, and I have on the line with me, all the way from San Francisco, USA, Seth Siegel, one of the three original co-founders of Starbucks. What advice would you give to your younger self now when you first started embarking on entrepreneurship?
Well, I do have a good suggestion for new entrepreneurs. And it doesn't matter what type of business they're working on. It could be a computer gaming company or something in social media or tourism. It doesn't matter what the company is.
Mm-hmm.
The advice is learn how to do financial forecasting really well.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can't do it, if it's not something you're very good at, get someone who knows how to do it to teach you.
Mm-hmm.
It's not hard to learn. It's worth it because when you understand forecasting really well, you'll be able to make a good impression on investors and on bankers, and that is extremely important.
Mm.
I would say that more than half of the young entrepreneurs that I work with, when I meet them, they're not very good at forecasting.
Mm.
They have to learn it.
Mm-hmm.
But when they learn it, then they start to feel much more confident and they can make a good impression
mm-hmm.
on the people who are going to provide the money for their new business.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think a lot of them are more engrossed in validating their product instead of forecasting how the finance is going
right.
to go.
Yeah. Most new entrepreneurs are what are known in business as product-oriented people.
Mm.
They think about the product or the service that they're going to provide. And, you know, connecting with the customer, as I said, more than half of the young entrepreneurs that I coach are that way. They're product oriented and they need to also be good at managing and especially at projecting their finances.
If you had a chance, is there anything you would do differently when you created Starbucks?
Yes. In a word, yes is the answer.
Uh-huh.
A question like that is, it's a little bit painful to answer it. I'm sure there are things in your life that you wish you could have done differently, but it's hard to talk about it. The first thing that we could have done is more quickly arrived at the conclusion that we needed to focus all of our energy on roasting and retailing.
Hmm.
During the 70s, we tried some experimental companies. There were like divisions of Starbucks, new divisions,
uh-huh.
which were okay, but they were not nearly as good as just roasting and retailing coffee.
Hmm.
So I wish we had focused on that earlier. And there's a second thing, and this is only looking back in time. I think that Starbucks could have moved into creating coffee bars under our own brand,
mm.
the Starbucks brand, several years earlier than we did.
Oh, I see.
We chose to continue for a little too long as a wholesale supplier to independent coffee bars. We didn't want to do anything to make them mad. We were being a good wholesale supplier, delivering coffee to coffee bars all over the Seattle area.
Mm-hmm.
The three founders could have jumped into opening coffee bars of our own much earlier than the company did.
I see.
Those are two things which we could have done differently.
Okay. Given all of that, how do you feel about how Starbucks have grown today?
You know, how do I look at Starbucks as a company with 27,000 stores? I feel very, very good about it.
Uh-huh.
The three founders, I think, created a really good foundation.
Yeah.
On which the present company is built, which the foundation included a sort of an unshakable belief in no compromise on the quality of coffee, always trying to have the best, most flavorful roasted coffee.
Mm.
And another thing is the founders believe that you do not discount your main product, which is coffee and coffee beverages, because that cheapens the product if you start offering lots of discounts.
Mm.
Also, we really strongly believed, and the company still does, in establishing warm relationships with our customers.
Mm-hmm.
We tried to have our employees remember customers' names, to greet them, to try and educate them about coffee, always to have a good relationship. I must say, even with 27,000 stores, so when I go into a store in Kuwait City,
mm-hmm.
Which I did 2 years ago, it was the same wonderful kind of experience that I could have around the corner from my house.
Yeah. That's one of the things that Starbucks is really known for, this really warm, hospitable customer service. What can other startups learn from this?
Well, there are a couple of things. One is Starbucks treats its employees very well.
Mm.
Compared to, say, other fast food companies. And the employees get a lot of training. In most places, they're paid fairly well. And there are some fringe benefits. In the United States, employees of Starbucks can take online courses from the University of Phoenix.
Mm.
No charge. So those things make happy employees. And those happy employees make good baristas who in turn make happy customers.
Yeah. That's really nice to hear. What lessons can startups learn from Starbucks about market presence and branding?
Starbucks has been a very good branding company from the first day of business. And there are good reasons for that. Among the founders, one of the co-founders was a man named Gordon Bowker.
Mm-hmm.
And a wonderful guy, still a good friend.
Mm-hmm.
Gordon is a high-level marketing guru. So he wasn't when we started Starbucks, he was just beginning his career.
Uh-huh.
But he had all the instincts necessary to make sure that Starbucks graphics, the use of our logo, for example, and our packaging, and the way we positioned ourselves in the first market that we entered, which was Seattle, Washington, he was the architect of that. Later, after the group led by Howard Schultz began to run the company, this was in the mid-1980s,
mm-hmm.
it turned out that they also were very, very good at managing the brand.
Uh-huh.
Very carefully, very, very, very carefully. And, you know, Starbucks is considered one of the great branding companies on our planet today. It's exceptional. So, but, you know, it was true in the 70s, but just at a smaller scale, just in one market. Now it's true all over the world. You know, the nice experience that Malaysians have when they visit a Starbucks, if they would get on a plane and go to Kuwait or to Paris, London, New York City, they would get the same experience.
Mm.
It's just unbelievable how carefully the brand is managed.
On the phone with us is Seth Siegel, one of the original three co-founders of Starbucks. We will be taking another short break right now, but when we come back, we will talk to Seth about how he feels about technology and social media, as well as advice that he has for new entrepreneurs. This is Enterprise on BFM 89.9.
Bigotry Free Malaysia, BFM 89.9.
And we are back on Enterprise, and today we are speaking to one of the co-founders of Starbucks, Seth Siegel, who joins us over the phone from San Francisco, USA. Starbucks was founded in 1971, and that's a good 46 years ago. The business startup landscape is clearly different then as it is now. How do you feel about today's technology and social media tools, especially in relation to all the possibilities that it offers to startups?
Social media is the best thing that's happened to business since the invention of money. Social media has helped so many companies and so many consumers come together in a really productive way. For example, Starbucks customers are empowered in many ways by the company to talk about Starbucks in social media.
Mm.
They can do it through the company. They can do it through Facebook and many other social sites. And they do.
Yeah.
But the company also conducts polls through social media to get feedback from customers. So it's a two-way street.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think that's marvelous. Also, I was talking with a barista at a Starbucks at 9 o'clock last night. Just as he was closing, I went in and got a little coffee, and we started joking about all the ways that you can pay for a purchase at Starbucks.
Wow.
You can use money, you can use a credit card, you can use a Starbucks, card by drawing on your cash. It's wonderful
mm-hmm.
that there are so many ways you can pay, and that's an application of technology that's fabulous.
Yeah. How do you feel about how far technology has come from the time in the 70s when you were running Starbucks to all the way to now?
Oh, I'm in my life, I embrace change. I love change. Life is so much better right now with the internet. Yes, there are some things about the internet that are really terrible. Fake news and, hate postings and that kind of thing. But on balance, it's just a reflection of human beings. And, I think it's fascinating that people are connected on LinkedIn, that they can text anywhere in the world instantly and get a response, that they can contact a company, can order dinner and have it delivered. And now also at Starbucks, you can, here in Seattle at least, and most of the United States, you can order your drink and then go and pick it up without waiting in line.
Now that you're coaching startups and you're working on your projects and all, what keeps you awake at night?
Oh, I give presentations all over the world. They're almost all about the challenges that are involved in starting a new venture.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd say that when I wake up at night, I'm usually thinking about how I'm going to connect with the next audience because there are so many cultural problems. For instance, if I'm going to Moscow or Rio de Janeiro, I have to understand how audiences react to certain things.
Mm-hmm.
60 days ago, I gave a presentation in Bogota, Colombia, and that one kept me awake for several nights before it was over. But in the end, the audience was very positive.
Uh-huh.
I'd say it's the anticipation of each presentation that really keeps me awake at night.
What advice do you have for entrepreneurs and startups today, if there's that one thing they absolutely have to have their eye on?
I think that the most important thing that a person who's thinking about going into business needs to keep their eye on is not to let their enthusiasm for whatever it is take them, not to let that enthusiasm go beyond reality and into fantasy land. So it's important to research the concept really well so that you'll be ready, you know, with answers to questions that will come up, especially if a really smart investor that you're talking to is going to start asking you questions.
Mm-hmm.
So the research really matters.
Yeah, because a lot of entrepreneurs are dreamers, and so a lot of them need to balance between having reaching for the stars and keeping their feet on the ground. How do they strike that balance?
Well, there's some friends of mine and I like to watch young entrepreneurs when they're talking about their idea.
Yeah.
If they start waving their hands in the air, we start asking a lot of questions.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's sort of, it's not completely true, but there's a feeling that when an entrepreneur starts waving their hands in the air, that means they're dreaming.
Oh, okay.
Maybe you know people like that. They get very excited and start moving their hands around in the air. It would be better if they not only had that excitement,
mm-hmm.
but also had a good foundation in the numbers and what are called performance ratios for businesses and percentages and all the things that help a business be successful. It's not enough to have enthusiasm. You need enthusiasm, but you have to also have a good foundation.
One last question. For you personally, what's next?
Oh, I am going to continue until there is no breath left in my body. helping people who are starting companies do a good job and not crash into any hidden walls.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's really important. I've had some success in my life, and I think it's really important for people like me to give back
mm-hmm.
and to try and be a good audience. A good coach is the way I like to phrase it.
Mm-hmm.
Not to get in the way, but to point out by asking questions what some problems might be. Have you thought of this? Have you thought of that?
Thank you so much for speaking to me this morning on my side and evening on your side.
Thank you. You are so welcome.
I've been speaking to Seth Siegel, one of the co-founders of Starbucks. If you've missed any part of this interview, or if you would like to listen to it again and share it with all your friends, you can find this interview on podcast via the BFM app, available right now on the App Store and on Google Play. My name is Majida Hashim, and this has been Enterprise on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.